You are Locked On Ravens, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Ravens, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Ravens podcast. This is our Monday episode. So the Ravens played on Thursday, so we've had a few days to kind of process things, to digest things, see how the rest of the league has done on their Sunday games, and then we prepare for Monday Night Football later on tonight. We've got an amazing show. We're going to talk a little about how the Ravens can improve. Obviously, if you watch the game, if you listen to our podcast following the game, you know the Ravens lost. So how can they improve upon that? We're also going to talk a little about which version of the Ravens is the real one. We've seen two different versions of this team. And then we're going to go over our PFF stat of the week, as well as some breaking news that happened just minutes before we actually started recording. I'm going to mention our sponsors real quick, MyBookie and Vivid Seats. Real quick, let's go ahead and talk about the breaking news, which is earlier in the morning it was kind of reported that the Ravens were going to re-sign Albert McClellan, the linebacker that had been with Baltimore for a while. They actually made that move, and in order to fully make that move, they had to move cornerback Maurice Kennedy to injured reserve. Jacob, how do you feel about this?
Well, I mean, it's just kind of another one of the injuries that we started the season here talking about the Ravens with them being relatively unscathed throughout the preseason, which through the last couple of years has not been the case. And now it seems like a few more of those injuries mounting. I mean, it's a big one because he's a versatile guy that was especially big on special teams. So and John Harbaugh being a special teams guy, I mean, you know how important special teams are to him. And he just puts an extra emphasis on that, you know, all three phases of the game. So obviously not what the Ravens wanted. You know, they still have, at least they have a veteran guy here to step in and fill the roster spot.
And we talked a little about that following the game, in which once Mosley kind of went out with his knee injury, the entire defense really kind of crumbled around. And a lot of that was based on the fact that no one really seemed to kind of take that leadership role, at least not initially. It took a little while for Peanut, Patrick Onwuasor, to kind of give up the helmet with a microphone in it to somebody else. Then things kind of settled down for the most part. But yeah, having Mosley out was a huge thing for that veteran leadership ability. With McClellan in, he has started 23 games, including 11 in 2016. He was expected to be the starter last year, but went on injured reserve with a knee injury. So certainly, if you're going to replace somebody, you know, McClellan's not a star by any means. He's not going to replace Mosley one for one, but he is a veteran guy that you can kind of maybe limp through a little bit, depending on how long Mosley's out. Now, that being said, there has been no timeline for Mosley's return. They say it's a bone bruise. Luckily, there's no structural damage, but having had bone bruises before, those things can last a while. So we'll see exactly how long that ends up going for C.J. Mosley. And on the flip side, Maurice Kennedy, this is his third season. He's been in the league for 3 years, third season on injured reserve. At a certain point, I got to imagine they're going to do the Campanero treatment with him, which is just see you.
Dixon in the same kind of camp where he's had multiple injuries here now. So that's ultimately the most frustrating thing that an organization can deal with is, you know, you have a guy that you like, but he just can't stay on the field and you invest into him and it just doesn't work out that way. That's the most frustrating thing for everyone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's go ahead and talk a little bit more about the PFF stat of the week. We have teamed up here at the Locked On Network with Pro Football Focus to talk a little bit about some kind of the key things that maybe you didn't necessarily know. And in this one, our key stat is Matt Skura, the center, brand new center for the Baltimore Ravens, actually had the highest grade of week two. And even further, PFF stat of the week, he's actually the second best graded offensive lineman on the Baltimore Ravens behind Marshall Yanda total for the season. Now, granted, only two games, but still, you know, we were talking a little about this before, Jacob. That's not really a great stat. Knowing that Matt Skura is your best offensive lineman of week two, not fantastic. Not what you want to hear if you're a fan.
Yeah, I mean, he did have, he didn't have any hurries or pressures allowed in this Buffalo game to start the year, but then against Cincinnati, allowed two. So You know, you kind of expect this offensive line to maybe struggle against that Cincinnati front. That's something we talked about with the guys they have in that front seven. Even with Perfect out last week, you know, they still have some veteran guys that can give you problems up front. But yeah, I mean, definitely unexpected. And I think Marshall Yanda will eventually kind of come back to the mean where he normally is. He's a talented guy. I know he is getting up there a little bit, now age 34, coming off an injury. But we've seen some decent signs from him. The one thing I do want to see an improvement from with Scora a little bit is in the run blocking. And that's really just kind of what I want to see from the entire offensive line, is how they can get a little bit more of a push for Collins and Buck Allen.
Yeah, you know, in that week two game against the Cincinnati Bengals, their top rated pass or run blockers were Chris Moore, the wide receiver, Matt Skura right underneath of him with a 75.1, Marshall Yanda with 65.3, and then Alex Lewis with a 60.5. Right below him, number five overall, Joe Flacco with a 60.4. Whenever your quarterback is one of your top five pass blockers and your top one is a wide receiver, you're not doing it right. I don't care what sport you're in. Whenever your quarterback or your wide receiver is doing it better than anybody else run blocking, that is a serious problem. And obviously it's translated to just the running backs not being able to get any room. There's been very little yardage in that regard. And then same thing with pass blocking as well. Things have not been very good on those fronts. So, yeah, not pleasant for these Baltimore Ravens, at least up front, for the offensive line. Let's real quick turn to my bookie, though. The Ravens are going to be playing the Denver Broncos. It's a home game. If you're feeling confident, like I am, that the Ravens are going to win at home, which is something they usually do, check out my bookie. I would only recommend a service my listeners to my listeners that have been good to me. So I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, and I'm one of them, you can even bet the over or under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. My big guy lately has been Javorius Allen. My man's been doing incredibly well fantasy-wise, especially in PPR leagues. So might be a good person to look at there for MyBookie. But if you join now and go to MyBookie, they're going to match your deposit dollar for dollar. If you use our promo code LOCKEDON25, that's LOCKEDON25, they're going to go ahead and help you by matching your deposit dollar for dollar. So you put in 100 bucks, they're going to give you 100 bucks. Visit MyBookie online today. Again, that's MyBookie. And do not forget to use our promo code LOCKEDON25 when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Also, real quick, want to talk a little about the fantasy podcast. And obviously, we just talked about the fit with MyBookie. But fantasy football is underway, and we have two fantasy football shows to help you. So Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7 gives you all the latest news, the waiver suggestions, and the injury news that you need. Plus, Locked On Fantasy Football, or Locked On Fantasy Football is now Locked On Fantasy Football Experts, with amazing guests every Monday, Tom Kesenish, Tuesday, Eric Edholm, Wednesdays, Jeff Ratliff, and Tyler Lochner. Go check out Fantasy Football 24/7 on the Locked On Network. They'll be able to hook you up, and then use some of that on my bookie. Get yourself maybe a little bit of cash, and we'll go ahead and be talking a little bit about some other stuff. If you want to follow us, you can catch Jacob, my man Jacob, over on Twitter at Trox3. It's TROX3. You can catch me at MatthewS_NFL. And you can always catch both of us. We kind of both run this simultaneously. Locked On Ravens at Locked On Ravens on Twitter as well. And a reminder, we're here 5 days a week. We usually do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday segments. Depends on a weird week, which we've had lately. So make sure you go ahead and tune into us on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Rate us on iTunes. Give us and show us some of that love. And I checked there earlier before the show. We've got 3 new reviews, and all of them are pretty glowing. Everyone seems to like what we're doing right now. So if you do, come hit us up on iTunes. If you don't, hit us up on Twitter, DM us, and tell us what you think we're doing wrong, and we'll probably take that into account. If not, then we'll just ignore you. Jacob, which version of the Ravens is the real one? Is it the week one in which they just obliterated the Buffalo Bills? Or is it week two in which they struggled pretty mightily to get anything going, especially for the first half?
I think it's a little bit now. It's everyone's probably going to say it's a little bit in between, because you had two very varying results. You had the first half against the Bengals that was hideous, and you had the entire game versus the Bills that obviously went well. But I think it's closer to what we saw against the Bills. And granted, the Bills are very, at least they look like through 2 weeks, a very bad team. But something to keep in mind is that Flacco has always struggled against the Bengals. He has thrown a career 21 touchdowns and 25 interceptions against the Bengals, and he's 9-11 record-wise against them. That's the one team he's had the most problems with, not only in the division, but in the entire National Football League. If you look at his numbers compared to the Steelers and Patriots games, at least just looking at the regular season here, he's always risen to the occasion, especially in prime time, and we've seen what he's done in the playoffs on the road. 23 touchdowns, 12 interceptions career-wise against the Steelers, 9 touchdowns, 5 interceptions against the Patriots, and those have been teams that have been very good throughout his career, especially on defense. So I think this is just kind of something that Flacco has never really been able to find a great deal of success against the Bengals, and I don't think that them struggling on the road on a short week is something we should overreact to too much, and something to keep in mind as well. Flacco still, this has been a theme again throughout his career. His home road splits, he has been so good in Baltimore, 113-52 at home. Obviously, a lot of that has been the fact that he's played on a good team for most of his career. But again, that's just kind of attributes more to him at the quarterback position than any other position. And I just wouldn't overreact too much to this road loss.
You know, I'll say this. I think Terrell Suggs put it beautifully following the week one win, in which he said, you know, it's a good start, but things are never this great and they're never that bad whenever you kind of see things in the NFL. And that's accurate. And I think what we've seen is two versions of the same team. One that can be absolutely fantastic offensively, and they can harass quarterbacks and get a bunch of turnovers defensively, which just turned into a bunch of points while not giving up very many. And then we've also seen the opposite side of that, which is turnovers offensively and no turnovers defensively. You know, this is a team in which I think can be really, really good, but they need to work on some things. And we kind of, I always look at this in two ways. Or in one way, excuse me. When you look at both these games, there are common threads in both of them. Regardless, win or loss, there are going to be some common threads. Now, that being said, is the biggest one, and we talked about it in the first segment, the offensive line. The offensive line did not do well in the first game either. Just the Ravens overcame that. And once they had a hefty enough lead, things were able to kind of settle themselves out. That being said, though, we saw the opposite side of that. Where they couldn't get things done. Joe Flacco was running for his life. The running backs couldn't get anything going in week two against a better pass rush and against a better secondary. So that's one of the kind of core things there. Defensively, it was the same thing. Over the middle was bad in week one, and over the middle was bad, even worse, in week two with C.J. Mosley out. So, you know, I think when you look at this team, those are the two big things that are negatives. There's some positives going on with this team, and that's the offense can score points kind of at will to a certain degree. I mean, they put up a decent number of points against a tough Cincinnati Bengals team. Obviously, they blew out the Buffalo Bills. So we're seeing some encouragement, but just not everything's coming together perfectly. It's a game of matchups. So for fans that are out there selling tickets or burning jerseys or freaking out right now, calm down, calm down. They're still a good team. They still have the capabilities of doing everything that we've talked about before the season. Just, you know, they're not going to win every game 47-3.
Yeah, and you talk about common threads. You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because another common thread I saw, and this was in the Cincinnati game, where Flacco was able to find his tight ends pretty frequently, completed 8 passes on 11 targets. And keep in mind, this is still all without Hayden Hurst, who you're going to get back possibly after this this Denver game, maybe in time for Pittsburgh. So that'll be something we'll be watching out for. But, you know, and one of those 8 passes was for a touchdown. So that's another thing where Joe has always had success there. And this might be one of the deeper tight end groups he's ever worked with. And I'm really excited to see what Hayden Hurst can do, especially as we get into some of these division games. And something to keep in mind, too, you know, you're 100% right with the fact that no one should be overreacting too much. Obviously, you'd love to be able to steal a game on the road in the division. But the kind of good comparison here is that at least the Ravens are not in the position that the Steelers are in. They already kind of fumbled a game against the Browns, who they should have beaten by all means. And they failed to win again against a AFC team this week at home. So not only did you, you know, obviously not take advantage of a opportunity at home there, but now you're down a game against the Browns and feels like maybe the pressure is on a little bit here for them to win against the Ravens week 4. Even if the Ravens drop this week 3 game against Denver, I think the pressure is still going to be a little bit on the Steelers, just because they don't have as many. I know it's only week 3 coming up here, but they don't have as many opportunities as the Ravens do in the division, because I think the Ravens got arguably their toughest division game out of the way, just in terms of how they've always played against Cincinnati. It's been very much a toss up. So I think the Ravens matched up last year well against the Steelers. You remember they almost beat them on the road. So they have plenty of opportunities still available to them. And I wouldn't count this team out at all, like you said.
No, definitely not. Now, I want to say this for those that I saw a bunch of fans calling for Lamar Jackson to already come in. Let's go ahead and extrapolate. He's only had 2 games so far, Joe Flacco has. But let's extrapolate that over the course of the year as if all 16 games were played at the same level. He would have 4,896 passing yards, by far the most of his career. He would have had 40 touchdowns, by far the most of his career. He would have had 16 interceptions, which, you know, a little more than average for Joe Flacco, but still a
decent
pretty
ratio.
Solid. Yeah, 40 to 16, most fans would take it. And that's with 40 sacks, which would tie him for the second most of his career. That's, if we had said that at the beginning of the season, that Flacco was going to throw just shy of 5,000 yards, 40 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, despite being sacked 40 times, fans would have absolutely, they would have handed him another contract deal already. Don't go looking at just necessarily one game and going, oh, well, that was horrible. He actually had a decent game if you look at the stat sheet. Now, we kind of talked about it in terms of he padded there at the end. He padded a bunch of extra completions on there that were just little dump offs and stuff like that. But he still, I mean, he completed like 68% of his passes or something like that. 58% of his passes and still had 300 and some odd yards. I mean, he had a decent game. 376 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and a quarterback rating of 76. Keep in mind that Joe Flacco, for his career, generally speaking, has a quarterback rating of right around 80, 84.2 if you look at his entire career, including this season. So, again, not bad. Not bad, everything considered.
Yeah, and the one interception wasn't even his fault. He got hit as he threw.
Exactly.
So that's why the ball kind of went straight up in the air. Now, the first one, I'll put on him, definitely, because it looked like he was throwing into almost triple coverage. But the second one, yeah, definitely not on him.
And I want to say this as well when it comes to the defense, and this is something, you know, I was writing up a little segment earlier over the weekend. Making turnovers defensively is perhaps one of the greatest points for this team, while not giving the ball away is a huge thing. In games in which the Ravens have had a positive turnover differential, so that's taking your turnovers that you've gotten defensively, subtracting the turnovers you've given away offensively, and then coming up with a plus or a minus number or an even number. If they've gone a positive turnover differential dating back to all of last year, they're 10-1. So if they have 2 interceptions but only give the ball away once, congratulations, they're 10-1. In games in which they tie or lose the turnover battle, they're 1-7. So as much as we want to blame the offense, and especially Joe Flacco, look to that defense for not getting a single takeaway on Thursday night. That is a huge thing that certainly came back and kind of haunted them. So, I think both you and I, Jacob, were on the same boat with this one, which is a little bit of both is the accurate version of this team, but probably closer to week one.
Yeah, and going back to last week, this is something I forgot to mention. In terms of the turnovers, on one of the very first plays of the Bengals offensive series, it looked like there was a clear-cut AJ Green fumble, and for whatever reason, there was no review, no coach's challenge that came down for that. And I thought AJ Green had taken three steps, and I know this, it's kind of easy to forget about that, and I know the way the Ravens played, they played like that didn't really matter too much after that because they were overwhelmed in the first half, but that is definitely something that could have changed the game. And, I'm a little surprised to see Harbaugh. I mean, normally, especially in today's game, it seems like those calls come down from the booth very quickly. So I was a little surprised to not see that challenge flag come in. And especially when you can get some, on the road, you get a turnover early in the game, just any type of momentum you can get early in a division game on the road is important. And even if it's a 50-50 chance, I might be willing to take that. So that could have been the turnover that maybe changed some things. And you're right to point out the turnover ratio there, something that the Ravens have always prided themselves on.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I'll say this, had that been a turnover, even if they said that they recovered it, that would have been fine. I mean, you're talking about that would have been a drive ender for a large portion of that, and considering the fact that the Bengals scored on 4 of their first 5 drives, they scored touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Taking one of them away automatically makes that a much closer game, and the Ravens would have been in the lead at one point had everything continued going the way that it had in terms of the Ravens side. So, certainly, you're talking about one good ball bounce, one good review, one little thing here or there, and that game is suddenly a lot closer. It's possibly a win, and as we say every single year, a win is a win. I don't care how ugly it is. I don't care how great it is. At the end of the year, no one's counting up how close was that win. It's a win, and that's what gets you in the playoffs. So, it's not as bad as I think fans want to make it out to be when it comes to that stuff. But if you do want to go ahead and see the game on Sunday, they're playing the Denver Broncos Sunday at 1 o'clock p.m. here at home, M&T Bank Stadium. If you're doing that, hit up my man, my guys, Vivid Seats. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team. With Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in a section or row of your choice. I actually did this with the Baltimore Ravens for this game. There are lower level 113 right behind the end zone. Direct center, row 9, $109 a ticket. Lower bowl, it's beautiful, great seat. And if you go ahead and use our promo code, LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, they're going to take $20 off of any order of $200 or more. So if you go there and you go get those $109 tickets, you're looking at $218. They're going to take $20 off. All of a sudden, you're going to go see a Ravens game for $200. That's not bad at all when you consider that some of these tickets are going for $200 a piece. Every purchase is backed by 100% buyer guarantee, from the biggest concerts to games to the hottest theaters and more. Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter our promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, for $20 off orders of $20 or $200 or more. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. In addition to that, maybe you want to go see a college show. Maybe you want to go ahead and go check out Maryland or one of the other big teams in college. We've also got you hooked up here on the Locked On Network. Locked On Network's expanded with college shows. Coming this week, Locked On Wolverines, Locked On Buckeyes, and Locked On Seminoles. Plus, we've already locked on to the Ducks, Nittany Lions, Bears, the Crimson Tide, the Wildcats, the Razorbacks, Volunteers, and Cougars. Find your favorite college show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. Again, you can always catch us. We're the Locked On Ravens. You can catch us on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, iTunes, Spotify, really wherever you want to check out your normal podcasts, we're on there. You can catch us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens. You can catch Jacob on Twitter at Trox3, T-R-O-X, the number 3. And you can catch me on Twitter at MatthewS_NFL. Jacob, we talked a little about which version is the real one. We've talked a little about the PFF stat of the week. Now let's kind of move forward. Let's talk about how these Ravens can improve from what we've seen from the first 2 weeks, especially that week 2 loss.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and I know we talked a little bit about this after the Bengals loss, was communication. Just making sure everybody's on the same page. I mean, physically, you have some of the more talented guys all around. I mean, you still have Terrell Suggs. Matt Judon's a guy we've talked about a lot who we think can have more of a breakout year. Even without Jimmy Smith in the secondary, you have some talented guys. And now you have a little bit of a question mark at the linebacker position without CJ Mosley. So communication between the linebackers and everybody else is going to be key because, like I said, I think you have physically the guys talented enough to make plays to compete with everybody, any receiving corps, really. I mean, we have a good one coming to town here in Baltimore this week with the Broncos. They even added Cortland Sutton, the rookie, at SMU to their receiving corps. So that's the biggest thing I think I want to see out of this defense. And like I said, a lot of veteran guys on this defense. So communication really shouldn't be an issue. And maybe McClellan can help that when he comes in. So that's something I'm going to be looking for on the defensive side of the ball.
I'll say this, and I think it's something that's even simpler than that. And I agree with you on the just playing more consistently and communicating better, which will obviously help you play more consistently. I'll say this. I think it comes down to solely mistakes, and a lot of them have been penalties. Against the Buffalo Bills, they had 7 penalties for 51 yards. Against the Cincinnati Bengals, they had 7 for 51 yards. Against the Buffalo Bills, they had 9 penalties for 78 yards. That's a total of 129 yards that you've given up in 2 games. That's not great. And if you look back to that Cincinnati Bengals game, there were 2 defensive penalties early on that allowed Cincinnati to keep driving. They had them stopped on 3rd down. I think it was, a Tavon Young holding penalty, I think, was one of them. And I can't remember what the other one was. I think it was a Terrell Suggs one. That continued their drives. I mean, you're talking about you put points on the board. You allowed Cincinnati to add points to that game. And like we were talking about with that, just take away one turnover or add one turnover, you know, if you're Baltimore, to your defensive side of things. Doing that all of a sudden takes that from a 34-23 loss. All of a sudden, that's 7 points off the board. Now the game's far more manageable. You have the ball bounce one direction, you know, one way your way. Then that's all you need. All of a sudden, you are now winning this game. It's stupid things like that that will cost you a game. And this goes back to high school football. You know, we were always preached, just do your job, do it well, don't get flagged. If you do that, you're probably going to win this game.
Yeah, and I mean, you're just leaving it up to uncertainty anytime you commit a penalty. I mean, you know, even if you think you're beat or especially on offense, if you think you're beat or defense, if you think you need, you know, some kind of slight advantage to make a play, you're officially putting that in someone else's hands to throw the flag there. So you're just really risking a lot anytime you commit a penalty. As far as the offensive side of the ball, I think, and this is something, again, I mentioned a little bit of, but using the tight end to not only open up the middle of the field, but I want to see, especially, like I said, when Hayden Hurst comes back, I want to see them use all their different tight ends in different positions around the field. And I want to see them use those guys to create matchups for other players. And I think that's part of what they did in the Buffalo Bills game that allowed them to hit guys like John Brown. Crabtree had a couple chances a few times, dropped a few balls, but eventually was able to kind of get going. And Willie Snead as well. You know, he's another guy that can find soft spots, and really all across the field, he's very good at that, at being able to recognize defenses and schematically different things that he can take advantage of. So I think you have, again, you have the guys who have the talent to be able to win matchups and create opportunities for other guys. So that's another key that, and you look at any team that succeeds, you know, you look at, I know he's kind of a unicorn, but Rob Gronkowski, how he creates matchups, and, you know, other tight ends around the league too, Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz, guys like them who can, you know, help out the offense not only in the run game, but the not only the pass game, but the running game as well. So really that balance is going to be very important, especially as the Ravens get into some tough matchups where they will be facing some offenses with tight ends that will be able to do that.
For me, offensively, I think it's two things. One of them has been drops. They have a grand total of 6 drops over 2 games. That is by far too many. That would well shadow last year's number if they continue on that same pace. And so far, 3 of them have been by Michael Crabtree, the guy that they brought in to kind of be that possession receiver, that red zone receiver, the guy who has the clutch hands. You know, he has not really been doing it all that well. Nick Boyle has 2 drops, and John Brown has 1. So drops being a huge part of this team so far, and they're, it's not helping on an offense that last week could have used a little bit of help. In addition to that, you know, we talked about it in segment 1. The offensive line. I think it's just a matter of time that you know, James Hurst, who has been filling in at right tackle this season, he plays significantly better at left guard. And, I mean, right now PFF has him as a 60.2 grade. He is the, behind Alex Lewis, the worst offensive lineman on this team right now. And that's not great when you're talking about edge contain. And Flacco would probably agree with that as well, seeing as how often he's been hit. So moving him maybe to left guard, putting Alex Lewis in as just a backup that kind of floats everywhere, and then installing your rookie Orlando Brown Jr., who has actually been one of the best graded offensive linemen on this team, putting him in at right tackle, I think makes all the difference for this team. It's just a matter of Baltimore tends to not make those type of moves until, let's be honest, they're a little too late. So hopefully that's the case. Hopefully they go ahead and do that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I was about to say, how much longer do you give Hurst? Because even though, like you said, the Ravens sometimes don't make that decision very abruptly, but with this being the year that it is, and there's so much pressure to make the playoffs and get back, and Harbaugh in his last contractual year, Flacco in a big year in his deal, how much do you consider and how much longer do you give Hurst? Because, you know, you got the Broncos this week and then you got the Steelers after that. That's a big game. So how much longer do you give Hurst?
Well, I personally would pull Hurst already. I wouldn't have started him at right tackle. Orlando Brown proved himself over the course of the preseason. He played almost every snap, held up well in terms of his work ethic, which was kind of the big knock on him, and his stamina, which was the other big knock. And he did exceptionally well. I mean, he handled speed rushers about as well as I think anyone could have expected him to. And if he got his hands on you, you were done. I mean, he put enough guys on their butts to where I give him the start. That being said, is if we look at the two games this week or this season, he has a 76.7 pass block rating in week 1. He had 5 pass block counts. And then in week 2, he had an overall rating of 69.9 and 80.2 pass block rating on 12 pass block attempts. So you're talking about that's by far better than what James Hurst is putting up there. If I'm the Ravens, I already made the move.
So so that's your thought process. What do you think the Ravens are thinking? Like how do you, I know you said you would put him in right now, but what do you think the Ravens are thinking with this?
I think a lot of it comes down to they handed James Hurst a relatively large contract for what we had seen out of him previously. They handed him a big deal this year in an effort to be a starter at right tackle. I think they're going to continue, and sadly this is a team that does this far too often. We've seen it with Breshad Perriman, we've seen it with a number of guys, where they keep guys in well after the point, simply because we can't make it look like a bad deal. We can't give up on this guy. We can't, whatever you want to call it. I think that's probably what's going through their head, is they signed him to be a right tackle. He's going to be a right tackle regardless of what's happening. And it's part of that stuff that is hurting this team.
I think if they dip down, you know, a little bit too far below 500, I think that's when you might see Orlando Brown come out, because if he does struggle, you know, for a large part of the season, I don't think they would keep him in all year, just this year being, you know, what it is. I have been impressed with Brown. I know it's been in limited snaps, but, you know, on kind of both sides of the ball, especially pass blocking, we saw a lot of him in the, like you mentioned, a lot of him in the preseason, and he got plenty of run and got to see some different guys. So I think he'll be a good right tackle in this league. And I'm interested to see if they can, I mean, I don't think it'll happen, but if they could bring him out at the same time Hayden Hurst comes out, that would really make for an interesting combination there, with possibly their first game being against the Steelers. But we'll see how it plays out. I mean, like you said, Hurst, they might feel obligated to keep him in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see. It really depends on what the coaching staff wants to do, but I wouldn't be too shocked if we start maybe seeing those moves sooner rather than later, especially along the offensive line, where, you know, we were talking about this before the podcast started. They brought in a bunch of guys to go ahead and do tryouts. It looks like they're paying a lot more attention to that offensive line. So maybe this is the week we see the change. Maybe it's next week. Maybe it's never at all this season. Who knows? But I'd expect it sooner rather than later if any indication is that. So
I'll tell you what, man. Orlando Brown is 6'8", 345 pounds. He's a bigger dude than James Hurst. I don't need to be an NFL scout to put that one together. You know, just looking at the guy, I mean, he is a mammoth. He is a big dude, and I wouldn't want to mess with him. I'll tell you that much. I would not want to be a defensive end having to go against a dude that big.
Think about it this week. He's probably going to, whoever is that right tackle is probably the person that's going to be seeing Von Miller an awful lot. So I'd want to have Orlando Brown in there personally. I'd want to have the guy that, at the very least, might be able to put Von Miller on his butt occasionally.
You know, if what I would honestly think about is I would, and maybe on passing downs, if you know this week, especially, like you said, I'm glad you brought that up with Von Miller. Why not throw Orlando Brown in at tight end and have him and Hurst double team Von Miller? I mean, if you're really, I mean, Von Miller, I think, is that special of a player that you could maybe throw him in there. And you know, you got 3rd and 15 or 3rd and 10 and game's tied, fourth quarter. I want all my resources that I have. I mean, you spent a 3rd round pick on this guy. I would want all my resources spent on trying to block that guy, because he's the best player on the roster, not just on the defense.
Well, absolutely. And the great thing about having Orlando Brown in as a tight end, and obviously with the few snaps that he has had over this season, it's been in a similar role like that, where you put in an extra tackle essentially as a quote-unquote tight end who just does nothing but blocks. But in having that, you can move your tight end. If Von Miller lines up on the left, congratulations, mm-hmm. You're in motion right now, big boy. Go to the left. Go wherever that guy is. I don't care. Just line up with him, and I'll move you if I need to, but that's what he should be doing. And I know it's easier said than done, especially for a rookie who now needs to learn all of those plays and learn all the different intricacies along with playing tight end that he's probably never done in his career. But certainly against someone like Von Miller, you're going to need all the help you can get, and it's not going to be Nick Boyle or Max Williams that are going to really be able to help out all that much.
Absolutely, man. Well said.
So as we go on this week, we're going to be talking a lot more about this Denver Broncos matchup in Week 3. Obviously, they play Sunday, so we'll kind of have our crossover Wednesday episode. We'll be talking about the different matchups like the ones we just did here, as well as some other cool things as the week kind of goes on, in addition to breaking news. So make sure you tune in to us every single day this week, so that way you know what's going on Sunday, and you can come to the water cooler on Monday and say, hey, they should have put Orlando Brown in as a tight end, and everyone will think you're awesome. They'll think you're amazing, think you know everything about football. That's what we do. So go ahead and tune to us, Locked On Ravens, 5 days a week. You can catch us, Locked On Ravens, on Twitter, Matthew_NFL, and Jacob Troxel is at Trox3, TROX3 on Twitter as well. So thanks very much, guys, and we'll see you tomorrow.